In 1519, Hernan Cortes made a decision that would echo through history. Upon landing on the shores of the New World, he faced impossible odds. Outnumbered and surrounded by uncertainty, he gave an audacious order: burn the ships. With no way to retreat, his men had one choice: fight to succeed or die trying. And they did succeed. Cortes' story isn't just about conquest, it's about commitment. It's about making bold decisions, eliminating excuses, and going all in on your vision. Welcome to Burning the Ships, the podcast where we explore what it means to take risks, push boundaries, and refuse to look back. I'm Jason Seward, your host. In each episode, we'll share stories, strategies, and insights to help you tackle your challenges head on, overcome obstacles, and make your own history. This is Burning the Ships. Let's get started. Welcome to Burning the Ships Weekly Ramble, and I'm your host, Jason Seward. And before we get into this week's topic, we'll kick things off with JJ's Joke of the Week. He's going to have to pick it up. This one's kind of lame. I will go ahead and preface it, but we're going to go with it because he gave it to me. So I'm going to challenge him to step up his game. But JJ's Joke of the Week: what tree fits in your hands? A palm tree. And that is JJ's Joke of the Week. So this week, I am going, and this is something I'm going to start doing periodically. I've talked on here quite a bit how, first of all, this thought just randomly came to my head as I'm talking about JJ's Joke of the Week. And I'm going to tell a quick story that has nothing to do with the topic today. But it's a funny story. My Farm Bureau folks who listen, y'all will likely remember this story and get a good laugh out of it. So, years ago, I think it was 2015, maybe 2016, we went on an incentive trip to West Virginia. And part of that trip was we went like whitewater rafting. And we each raft had several people in it, but each raft had a guide, right? And these guides were, this is in West Virginia, this is what they do. They live in the mountains, they're funny, they're hilarious, but they not only guide us through the whitewater rafting, but they're also entertaining us. And there was this one female guide who was not on my boat, but was in the raft beside us, and she entertained everybody. And she had some very colorful jokes. I'm not going to tell those jokes because they are not appropriate to share here. They were very colorful and funny. Got good laughs out of it. Jokes. So we went on. I mean, the rest of the day we were laughing about these jokes. Couldn't believe that she said them. You know, stuff like that. Well, our vice president of sales, a couple months later, we were at our annual sales conference. I was the MC for one of the days. It was a 3-day conference, so I had to run the show for one of the days. And I think it was the last day of the conference. Yes, it was the very last day because we had breakfast, and then we had our speaker that day. Our keynote speaker was Marty Smith with ESPN. So I was the MC for that event. I got to introduce him and all of that. Well, as the MC, I get a lot of time on the mic. My vice president of sales knows that, put a mic in front of me, I'm going to try to get a few laughs. And we had a room full of, 300, 350 people in the room. So all of my coworkers throughout the company, and I've got the microphone. Well, he was also well aware of these jokes, and I had emceed some other events in the past where I get up there and have told some jokes to the crowd just to kind of relax everybody. All appropriate jokes, but that was just kind of the way I rolled. Well, I had made the joke earlier before the day I was supposed to emcee that I was going to get up there and tell a couple of these jokes that the lady told on the trip a couple months prior. So he came up to me knowing that probably I wouldn't do that, but he had to tell me not to say those jokes. Don't tell any inappropriate jokes. So after a very late night, after one of the nights of the conference, we stayed up late. I had to be the MC the next day, and now I'm up there. And I looked right at him sitting down on the front row in the conference room we were in, and I said, well, guys, I said his name, asked me not to tell a couple particular jokes that he thought I might tell, but I've got the mic now, and I don't think he's going to come up here and stop me. So let me go with my first joke. And I've started to tell one of the jokes, but I modified it to make it a kid-friendly joke. But I could see him the whole time as I was leading up to it, or kind of leading into the joke, sweating, looking at me, like staring death stare through me. And then I made it clean and you know, altered the joke. So I went on the rest of that day emceeing. I just kept teasing these jokes, but I was telling them in a clean way, and I told a bunch of just silly dad jokes and stuff like that. So from a joke standpoint, that was a very funny memory I had. I just randomly thought of that as I was looking at as JJ's joke of the week. So now that we've gotten that out of the way and wasted about 6 minutes of this ramble, I'll get into the topic. So something that we are going to start doing, or I'm going to start doing, is summarizing books that I've read, right? So I've talked about on this podcast before that I never really read a book. You know, I'd read what I had to in school and cliff noted my way through school and stuff like that, but I didn't really like get into reading for a hobby until probably my mid-30s. And then when I did, I leaned all in. So I went through a period where I was reading, you know, easily 2 or 3 books a month. And when I say reading, I was physically reading a few, but mostly listening to Audible books. I just process things better that way. A lot of times, you know, when I read, I'll read 5 pages and realize that I've got to go back and reread them because I wasn't even focused. So I listen to a lot of Audible books for whatever reason. My brain can process it a lot better. So that became really a hobby of mine. I'd want something playing in my ear all the time with educational or motivational or whatever. So a lot of books, a lot of podcasts, things like that. Recently, I have, just with a lot of changes and just a lot of stuff going on, I've kind of gotten away from my habit of reading. I still listen to a lot of podcasts, watch a lot of YouTube videos and stuff like that that motivate me and keep me moving, but I had gotten away from reading. As I record this, we're in April of 2025, and I had yet to read a single book up until a couple weeks ago this year, which is very rare here recently for me. So I committed the rest of the year, I'm going to at least try to get through a book a month. The first one I read, I just finished it up, and that's the one I'm going to talk about today, was one that I read years ago when it first came out, and it's called Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Holiday. He's written a bunch of good books. My favorite book of his, this one's right up there, but I also like The Obstacle is the Way, another good book. So I read that book, and what I do is, I listened to that book. What I like to do is in my notes in my phone, my notes app, just as I hear something in the book that I really like, I will make notes of it, you know. So I made a lot of notes on this book. And what I'm going to start doing moving forward is each book I read, I'm just going to kind of summarize it on these weekly rambles. So I'm going to talk about this one, Ego is the Enemy, today. And then moving forward, about once a month, I'll work in, you know, summarizing a book I've read or something like that. So, Ego is the Enemy. The title kind of explains what it's about. Just talking about all things ego and how, you know, it can be a tool, but a lot of times it's a negative tool. It's one that, you know, you got to fight against getting too far out of control. So, you know, in the book, he kind of explores like how our unhealthy belief in our own importance, you know, it can sabotage a lot of things, our ambitions. It can make us blind to our weaknesses. And in the grand scheme of things, a lot of times it can limit our growth, right? So, you know, he kind of breaks the book down into three phases of life, right? And those three phases, the first one is your aspirations. And that's like the phase where we're striving to achieve something. And then you've got the phase of life where you did achieve that, and that's the phase of success. So like you've successfully achieved what you were striving for. And then the last phase is kind of, which is inevitable in everybody's life, they're going to face some type of failure. So where you did succeed something and then ultimately lost it, or you failed at it, or it didn't sustain. So those are kind of the three ways he breaks it down in the book. And in each of these three phases, your ego poses your biggest threat, right? So the book kind of gets into challenging us as humans to replace that ego with humility, discipline, and like purpose. And that the whole book is designed around that. So a couple notes that, and I'm going off memory, I've got a few notes jotted here now that I'll kind of go through, but like my key takeaways or some themes that keep coming up in the book. So the first one I got here is like ego is not confidence. And I think it gets confused a lot of times as, you know, that I've got a good, healthy ego and that means I'm confident. It's not that at all. Like confidence is something you earn through experience, right? Through doing things. You gain confidence when you successfully do things. You get more and more confident in doing that thing or saying that thing or being in that situation. Ego instead is like I'm trying to think of the right words, but it's like a false sense of superiority, right? Like your brain is telling you that you are more important than you really are in a situation, right? So that's, you know, ego and confidence are two different things, and the book kind of touches on that. The other thing that the ego compromises is people's ability or willingness to always be a student, right? So what does that mean? You know, some people reach a point with success in that success phase of life where they don't think they need nor do they want to learn anything else. They know it all, right? You hear, you know, don't be a know-it-all. Well, that is your ego, right? So somebody with a healthy ego is somebody that is also always willing, no matter where they're at, to be a student. And I wholeheartedly believe this. I mean, some of my biggest mentors and the most successful people I know in my life are still trying to learn and improve themselves. They have taken that ego and it does not rear its head. And if it does, they squash it pretty quick because they're always trying to learn. They're aware that there's room for growth. Always to the day the lights go out. And by lights going out, I mean to the day they die. So another takeaway is like a lot of people's ego is loud in the sense they're always talking about the things that they're going to do, right? The things that they're working towards, right? I'm doing this. I'm going to achieve this. I'm heading in this direction. But they haven't done it yet, right? So, you know, to silence that ego, you've got to put more focus not into what you're going to do, but focus on the work that it takes to get there. So we talk about this all the time in our business. We know what we want to do. We have big goals and we're confident we can get there. But again, confidence isn't the ego. That's just confidence. We're confident because we've experienced trying to build things before successfully. But we don't talk about a lot. We don't talk much at all about where things are going. Once or twice a year, we meet up and like really focus on our, and I'm talking about in our business, but focus on our vision board and where we want this thing to be in a couple years with the 608B capital and anything else. But what we mostly focus on, and we have to work hard at this because it's easy to get excited and carried away with, you know, what might be and what likely will happen. Instead, we focus on the process, the day-to-day process. We do our job. That is, who is it, Bill Belichick or Nick Saban, one of those coaches. It was to silence all the egos in a professional sports on a professional sports locker room or a high level college program, because I can't remember which one says it all the time, but his way of doing it was simply do your job. You have a job, do your job. Stick to the process. Do your job. Day in, day out, stick to the process, do your job. And when you approach it that way, ego, there's no room for ego. You just got to get up every day and do your job. And every once in a while, focus on where that's going, but predominantly focus on the job in front of you that day and then do it again tomorrow. So the success phase in life is actually your worst time for your ego, because it makes you believe that, or makes a lot of people believe that they're invincible. They're, again, like I said earlier, they're not coachable anymore. They are the guru. They are the end all be all. And that leads to poor decisions. It leads to arrogance, which obviously nobody likes. It leads to complacency in a lot of cases. So you're not doing the job anymore. You feel like you've made it. So you feel like you've earned something, and therefore you lay down and rest on your laurels and all those cliches. So sometimes that phase of success, which should be the most exciting phase, ends up being the worst time when you have a big ego, because it leads to that next phase of failure very quickly if the ego is not in check. But failure then is your best teacher, right? Failure, like if your ego is not in the way to block the lessons that can be learned through failure, then failure is, there's no better teacher. So if you're a good student, if you're willing to learn, if you're willing to make changes necessary when failure happens, then there's no better experience than failure. I've talked about that a lot. Like, you know, I want my kids to fail and fail and fail and learn how to not be successful. I want them to learn how to deal with failure, because it ultimately comes. And during those periods of success, if their ego gets so big where they're so lose touch with who they are and how they got there, then once they fail, you know, the instinct because of ego will be to blame others or to make excuses and not own it. And that goes to another book that I'll review later, which is Extreme Ownership. But failure can be a good teacher if your ego doesn't block the lesson. Another takeaway is, like, and this is a big one I struggled with a lot in my corporate career. And I had a really good, the same vice president of sales that I was mentioning earlier when I was telling those jokes on stage, kind of was a really good mentor to me in this aspect. And that was the idea of, you've got to detach your identity from your outcomes, right? I am not my success. I am not my failure. When I have a bad day at work, it is not me. When I have a bad week in business, it is not me. So my identity and our identities cannot always be tied to our outcomes, because if that's the case, like I said earlier, there's more failures than successes in life. And if you attach your who you are and who you feel that you are and your ego and all that to the outcomes constantly, then you're going to feel like a failure. Your identity is going to be a failure. And that's no way to operate and move throughout your life. So when I said I struggled with this in my corporate career, like when I would have bad weeks or bad months, you know, whether it be through just a tough situation with an employee that I was working through, or maybe I didn't hit an incentive that I was working towards, or my team didn't, it would literally make me, like, I'd be embarrassed to show up to the next sales meeting because I didn't achieve the last thing that we were setting out to achieve. So I was attaching, like, who I was and who I thought people saw me as to my success or failure. So what, like, when I would succeed and win things, hell yeah, I'm there. Put me on stage. Let me talk about it. When I didn't succeed, I wanted to crawl in a hole and not be around anybody. So I remember having drinks with him one night, and I asked him, because he's the head of sales, right? He's got a lot of stuff that he's responsible for, and, you know, half of them he succeeded with and half he didn't. But I always noticed, like, for somehow he was able to detach from it all, and, like, on the weekends and on vacation, just let it all go, leave it behind, go enjoy a concert or a dinner or whatever. And I asked him how he did it, and he just said, It's the biggest lesson he's learned in his corporate career, and one that I need to learn, which I have now. But what happened Monday through Friday in that corporate job is not who he is. He's responsible for the outcomes. He is not the outcome. And that's always stuck with me. And I appreciated that advice. And it, you know, this book kind of goes into that as well. You can't do that without suppressing your ego, right? Your ego is the thing that it was the thing. My ego was the thing that made me not want to be in those rooms when I wasn't doing very well. My ego was also the thing that made me want to strut into those rooms when I was doing well, right? Because it was me, right? If I wasn't doing well, I was embarrassed. If I was doing well, I was confident and I wanted everybody to know about it. So that was a horrible way to be. And I was like that for a lot of years. And thankfully, through just maturity, some good mentorship, and really experience, I've learned to not be that way. So another note I made was to be humble in your aspirations, gracious in your success, and resilient in your failures. That's all self-explanatory, right? So my aspirations, what I want, like our business at 608B Capital, I have a lot of big aspirations for that. I mentioned earlier, we don't focus on them too much, but we have a lot of big aspirations. It's what we're striving for. It's what we're chasing. But I'm humble in that, in the sense I know that kind of what I was just saying, if the outcome isn't what we're aspiring for it to be, that is not me. It's not who I am. So I'm humble in the fact that, you know, we're going to target this. We're confident we'll make things happen, hit these goals, and the goalposts might be moved from time to time, but we're going to be humble in the pursuit of whatever it is. Once we get there, like we just had a really big first quarter in our business of 2025. We set some big goals, aspirations. We made them public, more for accountability than anything else. And we hit them. We exceeded those goals for the first quarter. While we did celebrate those goals, we were very grateful because a lot of things had to happen and a lot of people had to show up and help us and send us referrals and stuff like that, invest in our company and trust us in order for us to have that first quarter success that we did. And we're grateful for that and we're gracious in that success. And then the big one is resilient in your failures. I talk about resilience a lot on this podcast. It's one of the most important things in my mind in being able to just move forward in life successfully and without too much turmoil, is to be resilient and even be resilient through the turmoil that comes up. But being resilient in your failures, I mean, how huge is that to be able to understand failure will come when it does, dust it off, it sucked, we're moving on. Back to like not wanting to show up into the rooms, the sales meetings when I had like short-term failures from time to time. That's not resilient. That's being a coward. That is letting my ego lead the way and I just want to hide until I have some success again and then I want to show up. That's not resilient. Resilient is, you got me this time. I'm going to dust it off and I'm going to try again next time. And if I don't get it next time, you got me that time. We're going to make some adjustments. We're going to keep trying. I said in an interview, a podcast I was on, a guest of somebody else's, they asked me, I forget the exact question, but we got on the topic of like things I want for my kids. And I said, it might have come out a little bit wrong, but what I said is I want my kids to be independent and I want them to be hard to kill. Now, by hard to kill, I don't mean I want them to, you know, be able, that probably came out wrong, but what I meant by that is I want them to be resilient in the sense that you will not beat them to a point they quit. They'll keep trying and they'll keep coming back. Resilient in their failures. So hard to kill means they're not going to die in whatever game they're playing or whatever thing they're trying to achieve. They're hard to kill. And I think that's very important. So now I made a bunch of like quotes and like bullet points from the book as well. And I kind of want to go through those real quick, talk about them. And these are just some quick notes. And I, you know, some of them I'll just say and I'll go through, and some of them I might elaborate because I'm kind of referring back to them without reviewing them ahead of time, which that's the way I roll on these rambles. But the first one is ego makes us talk more than we act. 100%. You know, I talk a lot, you know, it's my nature, but you're not going to hear me talk very much about what, you know, what we're trying to do. Most of my talking is to try to inspire somebody, or if you listen to any of my interviews, I'm a generally and genuinely a very curious person. So I talk a lot in asking questions. I want to know more. Tell me more. How'd you come to that? How did you decide that? Where did that come from? I want to know more. Who taught you that? Who was your mentor? Those are, you know, I talk a lot, but that's, I'm curious about people's mindsets and things like that. But when you're talking with ego, you're talking more about all the great things you've achieved, all the aspirations you have, all the successes you have, and then you're not talking much about your failures unless you're talking about somebody else that caused them, right? So ego makes you talk more than you act. True greatness is often quiet, patient, and persistent, right? Enough said there. Like, you know, I'm in a business where I have to put myself out there. So quiet, kind of difficult because I need to constantly market in our lending business what we do, what we offer, and get people to know me through social media and other platforms so they can trust me and ultimately do business with me. Just the nature of how marketing goes now. But you're not going to hear me talking, or anybody on our team talking obsessively about how good we're doing, right? We're doing okay. We are always striving to do better. We're always going to be learning, but you're not going to hear us talk much about it. We are patient. And I've said this before, and we're persistent, but I've said this before, be patient in the outcome. Like, we know what outcomes we need and we want, and we're patient, but we are ruthlessly impatient in the pursuit of that outcome, right? So we get things done. We move fast. We're always making bold decisions and stuff like that. We're not going to talk about it much. We're just going to keep our head down doing it, marketing and being persistent in those actions. I've said this earlier, but, you know, it's just, I've had it here in my notes, so I won't say it again, but remain a student. No matter what level you get to, how high or advanced you get with your business or any other level, just always be a student. There's always somebody that knows more than you that you can learn from in any given area. Use purpose over passion. Passion can blind you. Purpose grounds you. That one's a pretty self-explanatory. And I want to touch on this a little bit because I'm very passionate. So I made this note, but I use a lot of passion in what I do because I really genuinely care about these things, right? So that passion, I can't suppress that, but the purpose of why I do these things always is in the front seat, is always right next to me. More so than passion is. The passion is just naturally who I am. I'm passionate about things that I'm interested in, things I care about. But the purpose, that's the driver, or right here beside me. Let's see. Don't get caught up in status, titles, or validation. They are distractions. 100% agree with that. And the book, touches on this quite a bit. But none of those things matter. Like, the purpose, back to the purpose. What are you doing? Like, what's the reason you're doing what you're doing? If it is to have a title beside your name that you're striving for, then that's your ego wanting that. And the ego is what? The enemy. So titles, validation, needing a pat on the back. Everybody wants to be told, hey, you're doing a good job, or I appreciate you. But if that's why you're doing it, then that is an ego leading the ship, and that's not good. And a few other things, like I extracted a few quotes from the book. And here's my favorite one. Ego is the enemy of what you want and of what you have, of mastering a craft, a real creative insight, of working well with others, of building loyalty and support. So ego is the enemy of all those things, right? And, you know, it's, I'd say the book is kind of a call, like to a call to folks to lead with humility, serve those around you and yourself with intention, build something that matters, not just something that's going to pad your pockets, but something that actually matters. And don't do it just for the flowers and the trophies and the applause, right? I used to be guilty of that. I used to love seeing my name in lights when I was in sales. I'm competitive. I still like those things, but that's not what it was all about. And sometimes I would get carried away, focused too much on that. You know, whether you're just starting out in a career or a business, or you're at the top of your game in whatever you're in, or if you're rebuilding after failing at something, like ego is always that hidden threat that has to be constantly checked. And the book, that's the book in a nutshell. And all of us have one. You cannot, like, you can suppress the ego and really do a good job and use it to your advantage, like leverage it in a positive way. So, but everybody has one. Everybody has an ego. So recognize it for what it is and put it in its place, right? It has a place that is productive, and it has a place that can be pretty dangerous. And the title of the book, it can be the enemy to a lot of good. So I encourage everybody to, whether you read it or you get it on Audible or go get the Cliff Notes of it, but look up Ryan Holiday and this book, Ego of the Enemy, Ego is the Enemy, and a couple others that he has that are just fantastic. And Ryan's also got, he's got a couple podcasts. One that I love, it's like a daily, just a minute, 2 minutes long, but every day he posts it. It's just a kind of a little motivational, start your day off with a good mindset type podcast. So Ryan Holiday, Ego is the Enemy, and that is the basis of this week's Burning the Ships Weekly Ramble. Hope you enjoyed it, and as always, I appreciate you guys following along, hanging in there with me as I work through my thoughts and perspectives on a lot of different topics and week to week, and as I always say, if this can help one person, turn them onto this book and rethink or reshape how they view a lot of things or one thing, I'm happy and that's successful for me. So with that, thank you all again for following along. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Burning the Ships. I want to give a special thanks to our sponsor, 608B Capital, helping real estate investors secure fast, reliable funding to fuel their boldest moves. If you're ready to take your investing to the next level, visit 608bcapital.com to learn more. If you found value in today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast. Your feedback not only helps us improve, but it also helps us reach more people who are ready to burn the ships and commit fully to their goals. And don't forget to share the episode with someone who needs that extra push to take bold action. I'll leave you with this. Burning the ships isn't just about removing the option to retreat. It's about unlocking the courage to charge forward. No matter the odds, the past is behind you and the future is yours to conquer. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time on Burning the Ships.